And welcome to Why Wait, the rise of real-time analytics, the Rockset podcast, where we talk with real people about the intersection of analytics and data. I'm Gio Tropiano of Rockset. Rockset is actually a real-time analytics database in the cloud, and I'm here with my co-host, Rockset co-founder and CTO, Dhruba Borkathor, and we are joined by Deb Benandry of Anvil Logic, an automated detection platform solution. Deb is an engineering leader with deep technical understandings in endpoint data security, data center security, and cloud solution platforms. Deb and Dhruba, welcome to the Why Wait podcast. And I believe that you both know each other from a previous life, correct? You both work together. Is that accurate?
Yeah,
that's right.
Work together.
That's right. It was a
long time back.
In Pittsburgh, yes.
Pittsburgh, awesome.
That's so right.
Steel City, it's great.
Steel City, yeah.
Right. So Deb, tell us. Let's start off. You know, tell me a little bit about what you're building at Anvil Logic.
Sure. Yeah. So we are building this detection automation platform to help, you know, enterprise SOCs. So there is this group in the enterprise security sort of org, you know, the SOC, the Security Operations Center. You know, they are the last line of defense in the sense that if some threat gets through all your other, you know, controls, prevention and detection controls, endpoint, cloud, network security products, you know, and some things always are getting through. We know that it is the job of this group to go hunt down what's already inside the network, you know, who's already broken into my house and hunt it down. And they do that by basically collecting alerts and log data and doing some fairly heavy analytics on that in terms of finding out, you know, whether there is a breach and how the breach looks like. We help our customers, you know, we bring this sort of knowledge of threats and detection logic and searches and queries and rules to help them automate this process of detection, engineering, development, deployment, tuning, recommendations, and so on. So we bring our intelligence, you know, our sort of, in some sense, the brains of detections into their existing sort of data stacks architectures they are running out there. So that's what we do.
Thanks for the overview. And the premise of this podcast is Why Wait, right? And it's all about real-time analytics. Talk to me a little bit about how you built real-time analytics into the Anvil Logic product and how your customers are benefiting from it, right? How are you using real-time analytics to solve your customers' problems?
So the, you know, today, if you look at the sort of the analytics stacks that are commonly used in the SOC, you know, today I would say Splunk is a substantial sort of part of the sort of footprint out there in the SOC. You know, the category is called often SIM, you know, security incident and event management, and you know, Splunk has a substantial sort of presence there. And one of the things I think, you know, as a real-time analytics solution, you're looking for basically schema-less ingestion, right? Being able to pull in various things out there without being able to sort of requiring any heavy sort of transformation, normalization out there. And then being able to work with large volumes of data sets, because what we do in some sense, you know, the breach detection use case is, you know, we talk about needles in a haystack, right? You got, you know, petabytes of log data, and there might be maybe tens of bytes and tens of events of interest, right? You talk about needles in a haystack. But what we look for, what the analyst looks for, is a pattern of needles in a haystack, really, right? He's looking for not just one needle, but a set of needles organized by, you know, machines, you know, IPs, hosts, users, applications, data centers, and so on, actually. And often it can go back a bit. It could go back, you know, from hours to days to weeks, actually. So you're effectively looking for these patterns of needles, you know, going back, you know, from, you know, days into weeks. And that becomes a high fidelity detection, right? You know, it's not easy to write a low fidelity detection that throws up many alerts. Perhaps 90% of them or 99% of them are worthless. And that's the problem today in the SOC, that the data is there. People don't know exactly, you know, how to write, you know, high performance sort of, you know, detections, looking for these patterns of needles, you know, against the stack. So that's sort of one way of looking at this problem. Now there are other more advanced users looking at more now. You know, Splunk has a certain sort of cost and sort of footprint aspect to it, that it is by no means a very cheap solution. Roughly about $1 million per terabyte per year. That's around the cost structure for Splunk. Now people will say that, hey, if I just have to store data, that should be, a few hundreds of bucks, per terabyte per year. Of course, usage and compute is extra. So there are some folks looking at, alternative means of doing real-time analytics using, more of the next generation of this sort of, cloud storage architectures. Now, the important part is now the analysts who are using these solutions, they are not database engineers. They are not even, in many cases, SQL sort of familiar. How do we give them an experience, a threat hunting, a breach detection experience that levers, reuses all the skills they have today from the existing. So that's sort of the landscape that we operate in terms of the real-time stacks, and also what is the end-to-end use case looking, that's presented to the SOC analyst.
Yeah, I think what you mentioned definitely appeals to me, at least, understanding your use case. You talked about needle in a haystack. You talked about how people might not be knowing SQL or doesn't have to be a data engineer. So we'll talk about those as well. But first, can I ask you more about the real timeliness of your application that you are building? Let's say you're building breach detection and threat hunting as part of your key product. Yeah. How real time do you want this system to be? Is there a lot of value in real timeliness of the data, which I mean is, we're able to query and make sense out of the data as soon as it arrives? Or is your system okay if you can just process yesterday's data or data which is 1 hour old? Yeah. I'm trying to see how I can ask you how much impact would it be to your industry if you have a real-time system versus if you have a stale analytics systems like a warehouse or some other system that you might be using.
So in our sort of, in this business, we talk about dwell time, right? Now, moment something breached the enterprise till you detected it here and then you remediated it, right? There is this dwell time. And unfortunately, dwell time today runs into months. If you look at some of the reports out of FireEye or CrowdStrike, they'll say dwell time order of months, actually, right? Which kind of is scary and unacceptable, right? If we can get it down to weeks, I think we have done in the industry a huge service. I think we start with that here, right? Now, there are classes of detections that can be, I think, high fidelity, and the real timeliness is certainly very doable. What we call IOCs, indicator of compromises, where there is a bad file hash floating out there, or there is a command and control server that is known to be bad, actually, right? And you can go look for those, file hashes, bad URLs, C2 URLs, C2 sort of, IP addresses. Certainly real time is good because it is very doable, and you're getting these feeds coming in. Now, the thing is, normally these threat intel feeds are coming in from third party sources, there are vendors, sometimes the government sending. So there's always some delay there itself, actually, right? It's also true that our adversaries, the bad guys out there, are also running fairly high quality engineering programs. They're also doing good counterintelligence, saying that, are we burnt actually? Is my hash burnt? Is my URL burnt? Is my C2 server burnt? So they are also shifting IOCs constantly. So the stream of IOCs coming at you is constant, and it gets stale very quickly out there, so there is certainly value in doing lookups in real time, but there's also value in historical lookups, because I do want to see, did we see this IOC a month ago, 3 months ago, up to a year back? And I would love to go see, were there indications of this group in my environment, right? So there is need for sort of, historical lookups as well, not just sort of real time lookups too.
I think that makes sense, because many times you might be looking at more recent data, and sometimes you have to go back in history. So real-time analytics is useful, looks like, for some set of queries, but then you also need the ability to be able to do historical lookups. Also mentioned something about searching in the needle in a haystack. You said something about these patterns coming in, and then sometimes you have to look through and do more of a search query into this database.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then sometimes you also want to do analytical type of queries in a database. Like you match these patterns and then you want to maybe sum them or aggregate them and check differences. Can you tell me
about search versus
analytical type of queries that you might need for your use case?
This is interesting because we in our world tend to group everything as a search, even though the analytics you're describing. Let me give an example. So the classes of detections we tend to focus on, and they're the highest values, are what we call the longer lasting detections. You know, things like, just like in any other engineering group, you know, the adversaries are running good engineering groups, and like all engineers have preferences for tools and techniques, actually, right? You know, certain ways of doing things, we all have preferences, they have preferences too. And there are groups out there like MITRE who are kind of modeling out, you know, what are all the common techniques and what we call threat procedures they are using. Those are much harder for adversaries to go change, you know. So let's say someone uses, you know, a PowerShell, actually downloads a malicious PowerShell script from the internet that is encoded and executes that on your machine. Now, the thing is, the nice part about, you know, this is that it's a fairly well-defined, you know, technique I can go detect, actually. But it's also the case that are legit users doing these things too, and unfortunately, like, so these sort of techniques are by their nature not high fidelity. These detections are not high fidelity. Now, almost always, you know, adversaries are using these things, but sometimes even the good guys are using these things too, like, so these are not high fidelity. So often one of the things we do is when we start looking at these specific behaviors, we are grouping, you know, by time, actually looking at, hey, in the last 5, 10, between seconds to minutes, we are looking at, okay, and saying how many distinct users did we see, you know, on that machine, actually, that sort of, you know, did that behavior, or distinct IP. So we're doing some count bys, you know, within a time bucket out there. Sometimes we may look at specific event codes and process, you know, file names in there, saying that, hey, am I seeing certain file names out there? So we're getting deeper into the field structures, actually looking at specific fields, looking at occurrences of the fields. You know, it may be regex based, actually. It's not just a flat, you know, you're doing, you know, exact matches, regex matches. You are bucketing by time and counting by distinct entities, actually. And these sort of are our basic building blocks that give you your, we call them our atomic detections, the needles. It's finding the needles, but not all the needles are true needles. You know, some are fake needles and some are true needles, actually. And then on top of that, we have another layer of analytics that's looking for the patterns of needles, actually, really, that against a given, you know, let's say application or user or machine, did I see this needle followed by that needle followed by that needle over the last, you know, maybe N hours, N days, and so on. So there are two classes of analytics. And you are right, absolutely. There is heavy sort of, you know, you're looking at the structure of the events, you're counting for various things by time, by unique, what do you call, you know, we use the term COI, often correlation entity of interest, actually, like that, you know, how you're grouping this, these events by users, you know, applications, you know, IPs, and so on. Yeah,
I think I understand what you are saying. So what you are saying looks like is that you do some search query first, which is a very heavy filtering based on maybe a few tens or hundreds of properties. And then once you filter them, you seem to be doing a lot of group bys and then maybe order bys, or I'm talking about SQL or database.
This is
how you are kind of doing your analytics. So you need basically both search as well as analytical type.
Right. And there's a time bucketing as well, that often you'll do a time bucketing in there as well.
What about now your data set might be quite, diverse, in the sense every event might have hundreds of fields. How important is it for you to search not just over time, like you mentioned, but also over other fields that are in your database? Like, say you want to like filter or index on the IP address, or you want to filter and index on the zip code of the event of where it's produced, or some other. Yeah. I mean, how important is it for your data system to be able to do that, so that your application is more important, more intelligent, or more powerful?
So this is where it gets interesting, right? You know, I think, and I was looking at Rockset, you know, this sort of full indexing or indexing on every field, you know, that's super powerful. Today, you don't get that, actually, say, in our traditional analytics, security analytics solutions. I'm not getting full indexing, which means when I'm coding my search, I have to be super careful to start with the knowing that there are some fields we're indexing on and start filtering on those first, actually, like try to narrow down the number of records you have to operate on, literally you have to do the full scan on. So you have some of the lack of flexibility in the underlying data sets flowing into the sort of detection engineering side on the analytic development side there. Good experienced analysts know this thing that some things are indexed, some things are not indexed. So therefore, you know, only focus on the index fields first, actually filter on those first, you know, then look at the rest and do the bucketing later on, actually. Not everybody knows these things. And therefore, sometimes people write these analytics, you know, searches that may take a long time, may bring down your system actually, right? You know, because you do want to run them for, you know, maybe hours, days and so on. And then if you don't do this careful things today, bad things will happen, right? If you had a model where you take that off the table for me, actually, that, you know, you have a more powerful indexing system that's more visible, that would greatly make it simpler. You know, I would have to be less of a rock star in terms of my, you know, my detection development than I have to be today. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that makes sense. You also talked about, what about things like so you talked about various components of your data stack, but could you tell me, like at ANSI Logic, what kind of data stack you actually use? How do you do some of your own analytics currently? Do you use any open source stuff, or do you build something yourself, or are your engineers building it for you? Could you tell me a little bit about your stack in particular?
You know, clearly we are not ourselves sort of, we're not hosting customer data in our environment, but we are getting customer behavioral analytics coming back from the customer environments, right? And we do a lot of recommendations based on that. So we kind of try to look at what worked, what didn't work, how is it going right now, how a detection is functioning, how's your gathered data, runtime data, sort of performance data, the false positive, you know, true positive sort of data, and even the tuning data. What are all the tuning activities they did on the rule and bring it back to the platform there. So we have a mix of stacks today, actually. We have a database we use, you know, we use database stacks, and we also have, you know, Elastic sort of, you know, as a document store as well. So we have a doc store stack and we have a structured data stack. We also use sort of Spark, you know, for some sort of streaming processing as well, actually, when things are coming in, you know, and sometimes there are multiple destinations. We have, you know, the learning part, you know, the data science pieces out there, like in terms of recommendations, and something go to state management and so on out there. So we've got a stack today that's a mix of, there is a streaming sort of, you know, intake side, and then we have, you know, multiple destinations flowing out there, a doc store and both a structured store. So that's where we are today, actually, out there. But we see it evolving, you know, and like any startup, you do, you know, I mean, you're trying to be, you know, agile and fast and solve problems for today. But I think as the data sets rise, and I think, you know, some of the recommendation systems, I think that's where, you know, I see real time shining really well, that if someone did something right now and someone is looking to do something similar, you want to kind of, you know, bring it, you know, to the front of that person saying, hey, you know, you're trying to do this, someone did that actually here, go take a look. And I think the real timeliness is pretty impressive out there. We are not there yet, we'd like to get there.
Awesome. So real quick, you're listening to Why Wait? The Rise of Real-Time Analytics, the Rockset podcast. We're here with Deb Banjeri and Dhruba Borkathar from Rockset. And for all the builders listening to this podcast, how would you build real-time analytics into your podcast? Please share your thoughts on our community Slack channel at rockset-community.slack.com.
Cool, yeah. Thanks, Joe. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Joe. I'm really interested in how developers use, is your platform very developer-focused in a sense? Are your use case, are ANSI Logic's use cases, are they actually operated by developers of some other enterprise companies who are building security, or are they using real-time dashboards to query your ANSI Logic database or the data set? How do you surface some of your outputs to your customers? And tell me a little bit about like the query latencies and query volumes that the that your customer might put on your application. I'm not talking about the detection part. I'm talking about like the interactivity of your system with your customers. How is that delivered to your customers?
So typically, so the users of our product are SOC analysts, you know, so they are really by definition threat hunters, you know, detection sort of developers. Now, I would say there is more domain knowledge involved here. Often many of them may have sort of domain specific language backgrounds that come to the, you know, table with. They're not, I would not call them pure programmers. You know, they come at it from, they may know SPL, the Splunk programming language, reasonably well, or they, in some cases they might want to, you know, be Python programmers and so on. So they bring with that sort of mindset out here. And typically one of the things they look for us, you know, when they come to the product here is for us to connect the dots actually for them. Today there are three things that an analyst has to do, a good analyst has to do to get the job done. Know his threat landscape, what things are getting through in his environment. He has to be aware of that because that's your foundation. Without that, you can't really do anything beyond that. That is changing, it's not a static thing. So there is a threat landscape, you know, and the threat landscape at a fairly low level of actionable granularity, you know, in terms of which are the specific threat behaviors that should be looked for. Like if you give me very high level descriptions, I can't operate on that. Give me something low level. That's the first thing. Secondly, what data do I have? Like, see, the smart analyst would know all his table schemas, all his fields and indexes. They would know everything, right? It's very hard for most people to do that. There are customers who may have like a few thousand, you know, sort of indexes in their systems out there. Most analysts might know maybe a few of them by heart, and then maybe another half a dozen sort of, and then, you know, it falls off, right? So our system sort of does these assessments, builds a threat landscape model for them, goes into the system and does these assessments. So when he comes in into the sort of lands into the Anvil Logic sort of, you know, console, you know, the cloud interface, he's offered recommendations saying, hey, based on what you need to do and based on the data sets we see you have, and the data sets are fairly complex. It's not just to know that you are collecting, you know, Windows event logs or Linux audit logs or SSH logs. What fields are there? Were all of the fields turned on? Did you collect the parent processes? Did you collect process command lines and so on, right? Which event cores did you collect out there? And you know, there is a wide variability. And based on that, some detection rules we have may not work for you and some may work really well for you. Like, now, smart guys can figure those things out, but you want the system to sort of be smart enough. And so right away, we connect all these dots for you, right? From threat and landscape to understanding your data. And we have a tool that you deploy into your SIM, actually, right? That goes and does the assessments, sends back the assessments, and then we use that in the cloud to make recommendations of both atomic identifiers, finding the needles, and then, you know, the suspicious, you know, and also looking for the patterns of needles, looking for the attack scenarios, right? And typical workflow would be for the analyst to look at that and say, hey, okay, let me create a private copy of the rule for my workspace so that it's no longer a public rule, actually. Deploy that in my environment, you know, run that in my environment, look at the results, see how noisy it is, you know, do some tuning. Almost always, if you have to do some tuning, nothing is good enough that it can just go to production right away, actually. You have to customize the rule for your environment. And as you do that, so we follow this detection as code sort of, you know, model where, you know, as you keep modifying the rule automatically, our you know, we have this agent, you know, the app running, you know, as part of your SIM, submits back new versions of this sort of code, you know, that you're modifying of your SLC. Version one was the Anvil Logic copy, then version two is your changes, and version three, your changes. We keep track of, you know, what are the changes and so on, so that we can start recommending to other customers out there that this rule can be deployed, you know, and these are typically the sets of changes you make to a given rule, you know, to make it work in your environment. Because there is always a burden out there. So that's roughly a typical flow in terms of how the analyst sort of uses our product.
I see. So I think the takeaway, at least from what I'm understanding, is that looks like it's a very interactive system where the analysts can give some guidance saying that, hey, try these things. And then the system does execute those and then gives him results. And based on that, he can do some more iterative exploration or some new models that he can probably push to production. Is that what you were saying?
That's the starting point. So that's what you start with. And what happens at the end of it, once you run my rules in your, say, Splunk environment today or your Sentinel environment, we then populate out this Anvil Logic Hunting Index, actually. Think of it as another table we are populating out of all the suspicious events we see in your environment, the needles out there. Mm-hmm. Now, against that, now that runs in your environment again. You know, we don't host customer data. The customer is running in this environment. Against that, today, we do a couple of ways for you to go look for the patterns, you know, look for the patterns of needles. They said, like, that's what the high efficacy alert, you know, detection is. And today, we give you ways to sort of define those patterns and look for those patterns. Essentially, we give you more analytics. But where we are going is that we essentially give you sort of this machine learning algorithms that can go mine constantly this particular hunting index that we created for you, actually, and then constantly keep popping up attack detections for you against this sort of Anvil Logic Hunting Index. We are not there today yet. We're in sort of a crawl, walk, run phase. We let you go define your particular patterns of needles you're looking for. But longer term, sort of, we'll be pushing out this sort of constantly new patterns to look for. And we're limiting only to this particular hunting index, not hitting all your other large logs, because this is limited to suspicious events you've seen in the environment, not everything that's not of interest. Because that's your earlier point, performance is a problem here, right? Because we are taking resources, you know, from your data analytics solutions that you have, and we want to be careful and mindful to optimize that as well. Like, so, So that's the second part of what we do.
Yeah, some of these processing could be quite heavyweight and might need a lot of compute and resources to be able to find this. You also touched upon the fact that this iterative process, it seems like it has a lot of value for your customers if you're allowing them to move fast, which is kind of fits into our why wait kind of question that we ask ourselves for real-time analytics, is that moving fast, how important is it for your customers to be able to do this iteratively and make your product better compared to your competitors?
Yeah, absolutely, I think. Because timeliness matters, right? The threat landscape is not a static landscape, right? The bad guys are also doing counter intel and seeing what the good guys are doing, and they're constantly responding, right? There's a cat and mouse element out here, which does put a premium on ability to react. I think that how fast you can react, I think, becomes a competitive advantage to your particular organization. And so, yes, in that sense, you know, to keep up with the threat landscape, because if you give me a detection after the adversary has moved on to other things, then it doesn't help me in future, but it might help me in the past. Look back and see, okay, did it happen in the past? In the future is less interesting, right? But clearly you want to be on top of the landscape to the extent you can. Now, you know, the general state of sort of detection is not, you know, excellent, I would say. You know, it's difficult. It remains a difficult magical skill today. Like, it takes a lot of magic by analysts to do this. And so we are trying to sort of, you know, bring the magic into product, actually, versus, you know, taking it in. So that's what the challenge is. But you're right. I mean, I think timeliness matters because the landscape is changing.
Yeah, especially with data volumes and amount of data that you're collecting. This is a challenge just for the compute to be efficiently used.
And to your point, so some of the responses we see on data volume you brought up, like, people are bringing up multiple silos now. They might use Chronicle for their endpoint detection logs only, actually, because of the great price performance point out there. They might be using various data warehouses or data lakes to store raw data out there because it's cheap. You know, so they might keep 30 days in Splunk. They might keep other data as in Chronicle and maybe, you know, a year worth of data somewhere, you know, in a cloud data warehouse. But you need to be able to correlate sort of across these, right? You know, I mean, you know, there are enough correlations you might want to be able to do across these out there, right? And you want to push the detections, you know, into various sort of silos you have out there. That's sort of, you know, customers want, because they are very heavy, sort of big, heavy fan silos, right? You know. So being able to push detections into various silos and being able to correlate across silos, I think that's also another use case we see that's emerging in our advanced customers.
Yeah, the silos definitely are a big problem, right?
Yeah.
Because it looks like silos give you a lot of operational complexity. If you have a warehouse and you have data in Chronicle data in Splunk, maybe you need a data engineering team or some more, like, just purely people in your team who are managing data. So is that a problem or is that a challenge in the sense you need certain data experts who are just handling with data, not really with security? And does it slow you down and kind of give you hiccups in making sense out of the real-time analytics systems that you are trying to build?
So today, I think only the very large customers who can afford to have some amount of data engineering skills, because now you've got to set up pipelines, you know, Kafka lines going into various places. You normalize once or transform once, multiple destinations and all that. Now you need some engineering out there to keep those pipes up and running, you know, make everything works, keep adding more normalization. So absolutely, you're right. That's what we're seeing today. Now, there is opportunity in simplifying this, I think. You know, I think there's certainly opportunity for product teams, you know, perhaps like yours, to come in here and say, you know, not a problem. You got, you know, multiple sort of sources coming in, and we can kind of, you know, give you a single sort of view into, you know, across all the silos, and you can run correlations in one place against it. Those are certainly sort of opportunities, I think, going forward. But you're right. Today, it's only the bigger sort of, you know, more advanced enterprises that are doing this.
And the amount of data that's being collected isn't shrinking either. So
no.
the complexity is only going to get even more complex.
Yes.
So, you know, to cap this off then, so what challenges regarding real-time analytics then are top of mind for your team, Deb? And how do you plan to address them? And what suggestions do you have for other folks that are in your situation that are looking to really capitalize on the opportunity that real-time analytics can provide?
I mean, one of the things, you know, one of the competitive differentiator for all of us is relevance, right? That, you know, the world is full of insights and recommendations. Most of it is not relevant. You know? We all get recommendations not relevant, right? And timeliness, I think, is a very critical success factor for relevance, right? That if something is relevant to you right now, and it has a short shelf life, right? You know, I was talking to my, you know, sales VP the other day. He was saying, you know, time kills deals. You know, the longer you're talking to someone, less likely, it gets less and less likely you close the deal out there, right? So timeliness, I think, is a key part to relevance, right? That if I'm looking for something, I get it right now. You bring the best intel right now, I'll absorb it and take away it. But if it's not there, I won't come back to it later, day later, and say, now, what was that? I'm looking for it yesterday, you know, I'll find it. So the real timeliness to me, that's the core here for relevance, really, right? That, you know, if you can support this relevance use cases, you know, then you create business value, engaged customers, engaged users. It's a nice virtuous cycle out there, you know, versus stale data, everything is stale. Well, I was looking for it last week, I don't care about it anymore. And then it leads to that sort of people start saying, oh, it doesn't work, right? That sort of, the, you know, you hear this sort of, you know, observations, you know, the analysts are making, it doesn't work really. And, you know, what they really mean is that it doesn't meet my needs as of, you know, that I have right now, actually. So the real timeliness of queries, data access, you know, recommendations, you know, anything sort of, any insights you offer, critical success factor, I think, the timeliness part of it.
Thank you so much. That's pretty much all the questions that we have for you, Deb. It was a great discussion today. Thank you so much. For fun. Sharing your experience with us about, you know, real-time analytics at AmbiLogic. And if listeners want to learn more about AmbiLogic, check out AmbiLogic.com, a beautiful website, a lot of information there. And for our listeners, we at Rockset, we're building a real-time analytics platform that can add value to use cases that are similar to the ones that that Deb described to us today. Once again, thank you both. For your time, for your insight. And if you're listening to this podcast and or watching the video, you know, please comment, share. You know, we'd love to hear from the listeners and what your thoughts are. And next week, tune in for another entertaining discussion with another founder of a software company that enables fleet management in real time. Thank you so much both again.
Thank you.
And have a great day.
Take care.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Thank you.